Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Alice Bryant, Ann Ball, and Pete Musto. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will have the next part in our series on America's presidents. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Muslim men are usually separated from women during religious services in mosques throughout the world. But one mosque in Northern California has opened up to let men and women pray side by side. The religious center is called Kabu Maryam, which means Heart of Mary in Arabic. Rabia Keeble set up the new Kabu Maryam Mosque in Berkeley, California. She was a Christian until about 10 years ago when she accepted Islam. It has long been a tradition that Muslim men and women pray separately. They sometimes pray in different parts of the same room. In some areas, they meet in different rooms or are divided by a barrier. As a new Muslim, Rabia Keeble says she could not imagine women praying in the same room with men.
I think at first, like most new Muslims, I accepted everything because I felt that was my role. I felt that that's what God wanted, was for me to accept what already was happening. But I think as an intelligent thinking person, after a while I began to see that there seemed to be an imbalance in that approach.
Keeble accepted Islam's teachings and customs, but she wanted to see the clergyman during religious services and not be in a separate room. She eventually found a way to bring males and females together and give women the chance to see the person leading the service. Hussam Musa was born in Egypt. He says he stopped attending religious services after the birth of his daughter 11 years ago. But he likes the idea of the new mosque and wants to bring his daughter.
Show her a new model that can kind of point out to her, like, you can retain your religious heritage and retain your religious culture in a space and environment where you are equal.
Keeble says some people oppose her idea of having men and women in the same room.
I've had some backlash from Muslim men, but I was determined from the beginning that if I get threats or if there's language or something doesn't feel good about it, I would just ignore it.
Some women say the separation of men and women in mosques is an important tradition they never had a problem with. "That's how I was raised," said Salima Jones, a lifelong Muslim. She now attends the Kabu Maryam Mosque in Berkeley. Now, for the first time, Jones prays with men and also gets the chance to lead prayers herself.
I'd never been to a mosque where a woman led a prayer so much as where I would ever think that I would actually lead the prayer as well. So it gives you an empowering feeling. You know, you can pretty much go out and do anything.
Rabia Keeble says her goal is to create a space where all people feel welcome.
And if someone wants to join me, male or female, Shia, Sunni, whatever you are, whatever color you are, wherever you come from in the world, then you join me here, and that would be very lovely.
The mosque is the second woman-led Islamic religious center in California. The Women's Mosque in Los Angeles opened its doors in 2015. That mosque holds worship services specifically for women and children. I'm Brian Lynn.
Protecting animals and plants in their natural environment takes hard work. It requires more than just declaring a piece of land a national park. In Ethiopia, investments in business and education are helping protect Simien Mountains National Park. The United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, or UNESCO, lists the national park as a World Heritage Site. To be included on this list, sites must first be nominated as places of great cultural, historic, or natural importance. With its sharp mountaintops and deep valleys, Simien Mountains National Park has been called the Grand Canyon of Africa. Its beauty is often compared to the Grand Canyon in the American state of Arizona. Kadu Sebunya is president of the African Wildlife Foundation, or AWF. He said, Simien Mountains National Park is a natural treasure for Ethiopia. He said that the park is important to the nation's economy and to people around the world. Many people and tour groups come to see the local wildlife, like baboons and ibex. These are some of the rarest animals in Ethiopia. The tourists bring needed money to the local economy. But the park's wildlife is in danger because of the growing human population. So the AWF began investing in businesses around the park, like special housing for travelers. Some profits from the housing are financing a school that AWF built. The school is part of the foundation's social and economic plan for the area. A few years ago, AWF launched a program called Classroom Africa. Its goal is to create high-quality primary schools near wildlife-protected areas all over Africa. Because these areas are rural, the children often do not get the same quality of education found in cities. Through Classroom Africa, AWF also hopes to develop the next generation of African environmentalists. Perrine Banks is the program manager for Classroom Africa. She said that the Addis Gay Primary School in Ethiopia's Simien Mountains will offer the community a chance at conservation. The school's conservation class teaches students the value of the wildlife and the importance of protecting it. I'm Alice Bryant.
Every year, millions of babies are born before they are fully developed. Many of them die because they are not yet able to survive outside their mother. An estimated 1 million children worldwide die each year from problems resulting from being born too early, a condition called preterm birth. Now, researchers say they have developed an artificial womb that kept alive preterm baby sheep. They say the artificial womb acts like a uterus, the female organ where sheep, babies, and other creatures develop before they are born. The findings were published in the journal Nature Communications.
Preterm babies are born before 37 weeks of gestation, or time spent in a mother's womb. Most medical experts agree that a baby can survive outside the mother's body after 24 weeks. But one study showed that babies can survive as early as 22 weeks if treated. When babies are preterm or premature, they are called preemies. At 22 to 23 weeks of gestation, an infant weighs less than 600 grams. The lungs and other organs are not yet fully developed. This causes breathing problems, which can lead to death. If such babies live, survivors may have physical disabilities for the rest of their lives. Doctors place preemies in a temperature-controlled box called an incubator. There, the baby is connected to special equipment that pushes oxygen into the lungs, helping the child to breathe.
American researchers have developed technology that may help these youngest babies survive. The researchers created an artificial womb, or man-made uterus. They have had baby lambs living and growing inside the artificial womb for up to 4 weeks. The researchers are working at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. The hospital has been testing the artificial womb, which officials are calling a biobag. Alan W. Flake led the study. He said that if researchers can develop a system to support growth and organ development for only a few weeks outside the mother, we can dramatically improve outcomes for extremely premature babies. Their goal is to help infants from 23 weeks to 28 weeks. When a baby is growing inside a normal uterus, it is surrounded by amniotic fluid. The biobag is filled with fluid similar to a mother's amniotic fluid. The researchers say being in this biobag can give a baby more time to develop normally. This may be true even if the child is born as early as 23 to 27 weeks.
In the study, baby lambs using the biobags were able to breathe amniotic fluid as they normally would do in the womb. Lauren Neergaard is a medical writer for the Associated Press. She explains what the Children's Hospital researchers designed.
So these researchers decided to kind of go back to Mother Nature and mimic mom's uterus with a fluid-filled container that preemies could be put into and take in amniotic fluid, a substitute for amniotic fluid, the way that they would in the womb.
When a baby is inside the mother's body, the two are connected through an umbilical cord. This long, narrow tube provides oxygen to the baby and takes away carbon dioxide. In the artificial womb, a machine connected to the lamb's umbilical cord does the same job. It provides oxygen and takes away the carbon dioxide. The heart pumps blood through the cord to a gas exchange machine outside the bag. But this technology is very new, so it is a long road from this experiment to helping the estimated 15 million preterm babies born every year.
Lauren Neergaard says the baby lambs grew in the artificial womb.
Now, there are no long-term data on these animals, but what they did find was that they appeared to grow normally. They were able to watch them over this period grow wool, even.
The researchers examined the lambs' organs later. Neergaard reported that the organs were similar to those from lambs of the same age that had grown in a natural womb. The hope is that these biobags may provide a safe space for premature babies to develop in a more natural way, even if they are no longer able to grow inside their mothers. Human testing is still 3 to 5 years away, but already researchers are talking to U.S. officials about making the biobags available to hospitals. I'm Ann Ball.
And I'm Pete Musto.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Millard Fillmore, the 13th President of the United States. Fillmore is also likely the least remembered president. He has been called uninspiring and having only some competence. But Fillmore provided an example of the American dream come true. He rose from a poor family to become a wealthy man. He was elected to Congress 4 times and nominated for vice president under Zachary Taylor. When Taylor unexpectedly died in office in 1850, Fillmore took his place. Other presidents' campaigns, such as Andrew Jackson's, had spoken proudly of their candidate's modest beginnings. William Henry Harrison's supporters especially linked him with the image of a simple house called a log cabin, even though William Henry Harrison was a wealthy man. But Millard Fillmore really was born in a log cabin. His family was poor. They raised him and his seven brothers and sisters in a rural part of New York State. Fillmore did not receive much education as a child. However, he was very interested in learning, so interested that he fell in love with his teacher, Abigail Powers. The two married after he launched his career as a lawyer. They had two children, a son and a daughter. Millard Fillmore soon entered politics. He won elections to the New York State Assembly and then to the U.S. House of Representatives. After 8 years in Washington, D.C., Fillmore returned to New York. He failed to be elected governor, but succeeded to become comptroller of New York. In other words, he oversaw the state's finances. At that time, Americans were preparing for another presidential election. President James Polk was retiring from the White House after only one term, as he had promised. The opposition party, the Whigs, nominated Zachary Taylor as their presidential candidate. Taylor, a popular war hero from the South, owned slaves. But the Whigs realized that many anti-slavery voters in the North would not support Taylor. Party leaders were looking for someone to balance the ticket. A Northerner voters would consider a friend of business. They found Millard Fillmore. In 1847, the Whigs nominated Fillmore as Taylor's vice president. The two men had never met, and when they did meet, they did not like each other very much. Taylor was short-legged, poorly educated, and rarely seemed concerned about his physical appearance. Fillmore was taller, learned, and elegant. Their personalities did not fit together any better than their appearances did. But a majority of voters liked them. The Whigs won the election, and Fillmore returned to Washington. As vice president, Millard Fillmore was the leader of the Senate. But President Taylor did not seek his advice on the major political issue of the day. At the time, both lawmakers and the public were debating whether the government should, and could, ban slavery in the territories the U.S. had gained after the war with Mexico. In general, Northerners did not want to permit slavery in new states. But many Southerners did. The debate was so heated that one of the Southern states, South Carolina, threatened to leave the Union. President Taylor did not want to expand slavery. To restrict it, he proposed a change to the rules so California and New Mexico could enter the Union quickly as slave-free states. But before Taylor's idea could get too far, he became sick. Fillmore learned the president was not well and prepared for the worst. It came. Taylor died after being in office for only 16 months. The following day, Fillmore was sworn in as president.
Thank you.
One of Fillmore's first acts as president was to show where he stood on the slavery issue. He appointed a man who opposed Taylor to Secretary of State. That man, Daniel Webster, and others, wanted to pass a compromise bill on slavery. With Fillmore's support, they succeeded. The Compromise of 1850 included several measures related to slavery. Two measures limited it. California was admitted as a free state, and the slave trade in Washington, D.C. ended. On the other hand, New Mexico and Utah were left open to slavery, and both the federal government and ordinary citizens were required to return suspected escaped slaves to their owners. That last measure, the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850, targeted even free African Americans and enslaved people who had escaped to free states. The compromise aimed to end the conflict between pro-slavery and anti-slavery forces, but neither side was really satisfied. And President Fillmore did not help matters. He was personally opposed to slavery. However, he did not act on his beliefs. Instead, he tried to keep the South in the Union by strongly enforcing the Fugitive Slave Act. By the end of Fillmore's 3 years in the White House, many members of his Whig Party were angry with him. Party leaders did not nominate him again for the next election. But their chosen candidate was not successful either. Fillmore turned out to be the last Whig president. The end of Fillmore's presidency included difficulty in his private life, too. His wife, Abigail, became sick on the day the next president was sworn in. She died within a month. Soon after, Fillmore's daughter died, too. To help deal with their loss, Fillmore tried to stay active in politics. In the presidential election of 1856, Fillmore served as the candidate for a new party, the Know-Nothing Party. The Know-Nothings were strongly opposed to immigration. They especially wanted to limit the number of Irish Catholics who could come to the United States. Fillmore did not agree with the party's anti-immigration policies, but he did not have a chance to put his opinions into policy. Fillmore finished third out of the three major candidates in the election. After that loss, he finally retired to the city of Buffalo, New York. There, Fillmore married a second time to a wealthy widow named Carolyn McIntosh. He remained an important figure in the city's charities and other causes. But the political situation in the country grew only more intense. Americans continued to be divided over the issue of slavery. Fillmore's time in office and his compromise bill may have delayed, but did not stop, the American Civil War. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.